Hi there, this is David on board the Varda, sending you a letter in the form of a tape. And this is the first time in 32 days the Varda is sitting motionless in the water. It's July 10th, 10 p.m. Azores time. We're not totally motionless, we're almost motionless. We're in the Horta Harbor in the Azores, beautiful place. This morning, Phyllis and I woke at 5 a.m. to sunshine, scattered puffy clouds, and a giant rainbow in the west. Porpoises were doing their leisurely loping and occasional leaping nearby. We slept all last night, just a few miles off the south side of the island of Fayal in the Azores. This is our first landfall since leaving Norfolk, Virginia, June 8th. Varda was hove to all night, which means two sails were set, small ones, one against the other in such a way as to move Varda as little as possible. We wanted to stay near the island during the night, sleep as we usually do at night, and then to sail into the harbor in the morning. It worked. We slid sideways about 8 miles, only waking twice to be sure we weren't drifting ashore. Yesterday we'd awakened to a sunny day to see our destination some 40 miles away on the northeast horizon. We had a full day of just about perfect sailing, fast and smooth, cutting an impressive bow wave. Our satellite navigation computer reported every few hours our ever faster speeds. We expected to anchor in Horta's Harbor by 6:30 p.m. But despite our sunshine out on the open ocean, clouds gathered over the islands and dumped rain that completely hid them from our view. We continued on the same compass course. We were sure they were there. And then suddenly, to Phyllis's shock and amazement, she was sailing at the time, the sails shook violently. The wind had reversed direction, and what was an easy sail turned into a noisy, rough, and difficult tack into the wind. We persisted for several hours, until as the sun set, the idea of pressing our way into the harbor in darkness didn't look too good. And so, since sunset's our usual bedtime, we elected to heave to and get a good night's sleep, sheltered from this new north wind by the volcanic peak that is the island of Fayal. Incidentally, Fayal means hydrangea, and there are wild hydrangea plants growing here. They're really quite beautiful. And Horta means garden, and the place is full of garden. And Azores means hawk, and the hawk, the Azorean hawk, is busy in the skies around here, the symbol of the whole group of seven islands, or is it nine, maybe. Our approach to the harbor this morning was a brisk but easy sail past colorful runabout-sized fishing boats. Then two small jets, wing to wing, buzzed us at what seemed our masthead level, roaring across the water very close to us. I saw afterward they were actually buzzing the town of Horta, not us. It was Portuguese Navy Day, and after buzzing Horta, they buzzed the harbor on the other side of the channel, on the island of Pico. Anchoring is always a thrill, especially when you have no engine, as we do. We reduced sail, therefore, before entering the harbor to make it slower and safer. Our first pass through the anchored yachts was too fast, so we tacked away to the open end of the harbor, dropped our main, and came downwind to try again. This time the spot I had picked looked wrong when up close, so round we went on jib alone this time and slipped further down into the area permitted for anchoring yachts. We turned into a nice open space, dropped the anchor and the sail, and drifted back, and then, though the anchor chain felt to my hand to be holding, it did not grip soon enough, and we took hold too close to a well-worn French yacht downwind of us. Just then the owner rode up, returning from a trip ashore, and he was quite reassuring. He says, "No problem, tie up alongside our boat if there's any difficulty." And at that moment a rough, tough, inter-island freighter launch sort of boat came tearing through the anchorage too fast and failing to notice our anchor buoy, which is afloat attached to a line, attached to the back end of the anchor to help lift it out if it ever gets stuck. The screw of that freighter launch picked up the buoy line, yanked the anchor off the bottom, and broke the line so fast that our anchor thrashed in the air, our chain rather, thrashed in the air, as I stood helplessly moaning the sailor's deepest moan adrift with shallow water downwind and nearby. We drifted back alongside our French neighbor. He called out for a line. We threw him lines, and here we are now, side by side, held by his mooring. His name is Jean-Pierre. He gave us the milk and some of the tomatoes and buns he just bought for his family. He knew what it was like to arrive from a long trip at sea, and we'd been 32 days at sea. We also learned that his wife, Caroline, has just given birth to their third girl. His good-looking mother-in-law, Colette, is here, living on their boat. It's hard to see four of them on that boat, now six, when Carolyn comes back from the hospital. They had come from Cape Town in order to have their baby here because of the new hospital, and they knew it was inexpensive here and the hospital was good. We'd actually not wanted to be anchored as such, but rather to tie Varda to the great chains that crisscross the bottom of this harbor. We needed a diver to do this, to actually swim down and pass a line under the chain. "Do you dive?" Jean-Pierre said, "Yes." "Would you dive to get us tied to the chains?" "Sure." And then with a grin, he said, "For money." They're very, very poor, actually. I said, "That's fine with us. So tomorrow we'll get Varda moved forward to her own spot, and it'll be a very firm and safe spot to be in, because the anchoring is not very safe on this rocky bottom. It looks as if Varda will be within a few feet of the spot she was in 5 years ago when she was tied to the chain." All this after Jean-Pierre brings new baby and Caroline home to their boat. We invited Jean-Pierre to share a bottle of wine, so he was here in the Varda for the evening tonight, telling stories over the last of the bottles of French wine Mike Monroe had given us. His compulsion for unrestricted life of exploration and discovery is awesome. He is beautiful and competent and joyful and independent. Powerful is his favorite English word. The French army had to let him go after 13 days, convinced, it seems, that if they gave him a gun, he'd do what he pleased with it when he wanted to, regardless of their plans. He wasn't the sort of draftee they wanted. Our 32 days on the water were fun at times and miserable at others. Porpoises visited three times in one day and many other times again. Some leaped clear out of the water and even tail slapped on the way down, as if that was their reply to our applause. The littler ones were especially playful. They're the kittens of the sea. We saw whales spouting in a group some distance away, and heard in the dark close by big sighs that may well have been whale breathing quite near us. We saw a few flying fish. A squid landed on our deck. Delicate white birds hovered over the cockpit in pairs to study us. And Portuguese men of war, which are jellyfish that sail upwind, were all over the ocean. Their bubble bodies come in blues and purples and varied shapes, mostly about as long as your hand, with a rounded spine of soft knobs. One calm day, we watched them lie down sideways by twisting the body to wet the sail, and then they twisted to straighten up. One sailed up to the hull so we could touch. The water is super blue in the sun, and very warm while in the Gulf Stream, which added 10 or 20 miles of progress some of the days of our crossing. Eating was fun. Phyllis baked excellent bread and brownies and pound cake, potato salad on July 4th, and blueberry sauce on glop over graham crackers for my stormy birthday on the 21st. She provided two balloons, two streamers, and two of those things you blow, and it uncurls and extends and tickles your friend's nose. Do those puffer things have some kind of name, I wonder? I don't know what it is. We saw many ships while awake, and generally went to bed at sunset and slept pretty soundly, awaking every 2 or 3 hours, one or both of us, to look for ships or to change sail. Lots of nights, it seems now, the evening sail adjustments could be left until morning, often with great progress. Some nights she sailed so fast, with such thrust and power, we couldn't fall asleep. Imagine trying to sleep while riding behind the driver of a motorcycle. Sometimes it would feel like that in Varda. Two ships approached us on the open sea. Near the U.S., a Coast Guard ship came over and asked us questions, name, registration number, origin, destination, and could they help. All very proper, no joy, no expression of interest or pleasure or anything that like that, even though we joked a little. We saw them again a few miles further on tending a big weather buoy. Now that would be something to run into out of here. I suppose it's well lighted at night. Another day, a freighter, the Maritime Dignity, came off course to see us, and in the process appeared to be running us down. No doubt they were trying to speak to us by radio. We have none. And this, we talked about, maybe we ought to have a small one so we could talk to ships like that for short distances. They looked and waved, and we did too, and then they went south. I was surprised that any ship would go out of their way to have a look at us. Would have been fun to talk to them. One morning a sailboat appeared behind us, and I hoped they would sail close. It was much bigger than Varda and faster. They held a course closer to the wind than Varda and crossed behind us and went south. These other human beings out there stir up great interest in us, after days and days of no human beings at all, other than each other. Other visitors are noises. Phyllis Ann heard voices on deck many times, coughs and conversations, and I could hear what she was referring to, but they sound more like the wind to me now. Tapping of the ropes or blocks on the deck can sound like someone walking on deck, and one time I was walking on deck in the middle of the night when Phyllis awoke and heard the footsteps. She thought I was in my bunk, and so she got quite a fright as I entered the door. She was whispering to me, David, wake up. And this person was coming in the door of the cockpit. That is actually me. We had warm weather at first in the 80s, but often too damp for too long, and cloudy, and wind that was too strong and noisy and violent. Later on, days got clearer and cooler, too cold for a bath on deck. We didn't feel dirty most of the time, but ultimately the desire for a bath caught up with us. Laundry piles up over a month, even re-wearing as much as possible. Sail-changing jeans got really stiff with salt. And the motion is often annoying. Spitting toothpaste in the sink, we sometimes missed the sink as the boat rolled. I got a cut limp by falling against the bulkhead on one particularly unexpected lurch of the boat, and Phyllis got a goose egg once. The negatives add up to thinking, do I really want to be doing such an uncomfortable thing for so many days on end? We talked of what we would do instead of continuing this life on the boat. The biggest issue was where to put Varda. One can't abandon a vessel one has built and loved. The days of good weather and smooth sailing, mostly in the fourth week, displaced this sort of talk. We developed our skills sailing, reading the weather using a book of pictures and text, cooking and housekeeping, fixing little things around the deck. We came down the home stretch feeling fine. 3 record days in succession of 134 miles, 131, and 120 raised our spirits a lot. Our satellite navigation device, which we call Victor in honor of the geometer Victor Klee, who's a friend of mine, gives us messages from heaven, as Phyllis calls them, every few hours. They do all the difficult geometry inside the computer and just spit out our latitude and longitude. And seeing the progress helps. Storms, not real big, but very unpleasant, gave us 560 60 miles the first week and 680 miles in the second week. Then in the third week, we made only 200 miles, and that was discouraging. But the calms that caused that low figure were a welcome rest. We actually went backwards 25 miles one day, and then week four, we did 550 miles again, and a few hundred miles after that to finish the trip. Our land hug came one evening after dark when the city shine of Horta on the underside of the high clouds above the island could be seen 70 miles away, exactly in the direction we expected at 62 degrees magnetic. We went ashore today for a stop at the famed Café Sport, where we were treated to our drinks by the third generation proprietor, Jose, who remembered me from 5 years ago. What a surprise! He sees so many people, so many sailors every year, and he sees them by the hundreds, and he remembered me. We met a family from South Carolina, and a couple of guys who came from Scotland in a 22-foot boat, and that is small. Those Scottish guys are lots of fun. Their wives flew out from home, and one couple would stay on the boat while the other one took a room on shore, and then they switched. And we've seen quite a lot of them, and they're fun. There are four other boats that small here in the harbor. That small sort of boat is getting to be quite popular, it seems. We all told stories of the joys and discomforts of cruising. We changed our U.S. dollars to escudos, which they call skruts, and I worked out a quick evaluation of prices. Their 1,000 skrut note is roughly a $6 bill in the U.S. Food and dinner and drinks are cheap. Mostly, we're surprised about how good the prices are, although some of them are not so good. Mail was waiting for us, and the telephone to the U.S. at the post office connected right off, but with a torturing echo of everything we said. We're going to try making future phone calls somewhere else, hoping that is true of every phone in town. This town is a delight to look at. Phyllis puts it off the top end of the charming scale for towns around the world. White buildings with fancy stone and ironwork and orange tile roofs rise up the slope from the harbor toward the caldera basin at the top of the volcano that forms this island. The fields are green, tiny little fields, edged with windbreaks of small trees. The air has the scent of a tree, which is the aromatic signature for this island. The harbor is pretty crowded with yachts, although the central anchoring area is not as crowded as it was when I was here before. They've made more places at piers for yachts, and they're building a marina for the first time that's not finished yet. Fishing boats in many colors come and go. Freighters and naval ships, too, and the sleekest, low-slung, high-flare inter-island ferry boats I've ever seen, just packed with people. We'll probably go to one of the other islands on one of those boats. The shower building is just 100 yards south of Varta, and showers are 15 cents U.S. And for another nickel, you can get a towel. The waterworks building is next to it, where we fill our water jugs. Ladies at the shower building, or just behind it rather, do laundry and iron everything, according to one report. Discovering the open air market and various restaurants with Phyllis is yet to come. And then the sights of the island and probably trips to a couple of other islands are in store for us. Now 4 days later, I'm continuing the tape. We've cruised the main streets and some of the back streets too. We bought plums and bread and pastries. It's only 15 cents U.S. for a wonderful piece of cake, and that's hard to pass by. And milk in a bag, and tomatoes that ripen to full ripe dark red, and wonderful cheeses. We bought some pears to try. It'll take 2 or 3 days to ripen. We had dinner at the Gracioso Cantina, where we sit at long tables, and everyone gets soup and beef and potatoes and bread and wine and banana and cheese for dessert, all for $1.80. U.S., a very simple place, and about half and half yachts people there and locals who have, single men who are getting their evening meal every day. Next evening, we had great fun with Jeff and Ann, who sailed in, arrived after we did from Poole, England, in a 30-foot sloop, came in 14 days on a straight run on north winds. An easy trip. We all ate at the Chaparro, chicken or fish and potatoes, and set with salad garnishes and wine and excellent desserts, $3 U.S. apiece. This is a place where we accidentally ordered octopus last time and really couldn't finish it. It was not what we wanted. So I knew to avoid the polvo this time, and we got other things. Some of the other people we've met from England and Buffalo, New York, have left already. Perhaps we will never see them again. But yet we could find each other again in some harbor on our route. To get treatment for my sore elbow, we walked around the corner of the island and up the hill to the big new hospital, which is too big for this population and so is mostly empty. I got good help from a doctor there who struggled with his English, and I helped us cross the language barrier by reading the entries he pointed out in his index of drugs that referred to the drug he was recommending. Scientific Portuguese is pretty easy to read. I was able to see that what he was proposing was in line with the treatment I got in Norfolk. On the way back down that hill, we went by a beautiful, beautiful garden with flowers and vegetables just tended perfectly. Phyllis wanted to buy some flowers. At the back of the garden, up against the hillside, was a very primitive dwelling, a very tiny little stone house with a thatched roof. So we started up the pathway, and before we could ask to buy flowers, the owner, Eduardo, pulled us into his kitchen, insisted that we have lunch, the usual soup made of greens, and then meat and potatoes, and wine and bread. And with that opener began 3 hours of looking at pictures of everyone he knows all over the world, people from other yachts who also stopped in, and his relatives, his sons, his daughter, his nephews, brother, mother, father, everyone, pigs too. He's effusive and happy and so eager to share his joy. He just had so many things he wanted to tell us and show us. His wife, Savina, knows no English, but she seemed happy to fetch each picture or sort of wine or cup of coffee that he asked for. We saw the tiny stone house. Downstairs has two spaces. One's just big enough for the bed, and the other just big enough for a dining table. And they have a TV in there. And then you walk up the slope outside around the back to the house, and you can enter the loft under the pitched thatch roof, where potatoes and onions are laid out for the winter in great quantities. And then we went on up the hill a little bit more and saw the pigs. Two great sows and 5 rather big piglets will be ready in December. And as we left, he loaded us up with carrots and cabbage, giant cabbage, cucumbers, herbs, and flowers. And he said over and over again, "My house is your house. Come again. Don't buy vegetables. Come here and get your vegetables. Take all you want. No money. You are my friends." And he gave it. They just gave us, insisted we take more and more and more, herbs too. So I wanted to make a contribution, so I came on the idea of making a contribution to the expense of replacing the thatched roof, which must be done every 4 or 5 years, and he was happy to accept that. His garden is tended absolutely perfectly. It's quite big and varied, goes all around the house, and right out to the edge of the road. There's no lawns at all. And he has a grape arbor where you can sit underneath and have a meal and pick the grapes from overhead, which aren't ready yet. He has 3 handsome sons with families. He supplies their vegetables, and his daughter arrives today from Canada to stay here now. The Portuguese like to go to the U.S. and Canada and work there a number of years, but they seem to like to come back and live here again. And you can see why. There's money in the States and money to be earned in Canada, but it tends to be cold where they go, especially in Canada. And this place has a beautiful setting and has good weather. Saturday night we were looking for the fiesta we heard about, and had decided it was too far to walk 4 kilometers, and we're headed back down the street when 3 young men about 20 years old, asked us the time of day. And when we asked about the fiesta, they said they were going. Did they want to go with us? So we sat on the benches, and one of them, who had gone to the U.S. and worked there and had come back to visit for a month or so, translated for us, and we had a lot of good conversation with him. We shared a cab with them, and our share was 60 cents U.S. for a 4-kilometer ride up a big hill. And when we got there, the street was blocked off at the top of the hill, group of about 6 houses there. One house had a porch, and that's where they had the band going. The band was playing rather clumsy band music, not something you could dance to. People were listening, and they never applauded for the band. Only a few of us yachties applauded. They had meat and liquor and Coke, soft drinks, pieces of cake. They were auctioning cake. There was very little interest in the auction. But mostly there were people. There must have been a couple of hundred just milling around, chatting and talking, tiny kids chasing each other all over the place, old women in black, and very stylishly dressed young people too. It was just a lot of fun to mix with them. And after a while, we decided to go back, and we checked with our friends, and they said they were going to stay. They'd get lined up with some girls, and it looked like they had something going for the evening. So they stayed, and we caught a cab and came down the hill. And our cab driver was extremely friendly, wanted to teach us Portuguese, tell us about what was happening. And his 3-year-old and his 10-year-old were riding in the cab with us, and he was going to be working until 1 or 2 a.m. that night. And I don't know how long the kids were going to ride with him. The 3-year-old was falling asleep on his feet. But he was lots of fun, too. People seem to be very happy and eager to talk with us. The captain of the port, after processing our papers, got into a conversation with us. And one of the observations he made was that in small countries, the problems are smaller. And I thought that was very appropriate. In fact, I wish every country was as small as this island. It wouldn't seem as if anything very violent could get started if all you had was a population of a few thousand people. I don't know exactly what the population is here, but it doesn't seem much more than that. We haven't been around the island yet. It's 56 kilometers, which I think is about 35 miles. We'll either rent a car or take a cab driver who does a spiel and have a look at the island. Maybe we'll hitchhike, do some walking, get up to the top of the volcano and look down inside the grassy cavity at the top. And another observation that was made here was made by one of the yachtsmen who said, who was talking about trying to get something done on his boat, and what he said was, time takes longer here, and I thought that was putting it very well. And so we'll wind up this tape, and just to say, we wanted to let you know that Phyllis and I got here safely, and we're happy in our first harbor, and eager to get news of your doings while we're here. A letter mailed by August 5th will reach us in time if sent airmail. Be sure to send it airmail to David Dollert, Poste Restante. That's PosteRestante. Horta, that's Horta, Azores, Azores, Portugal. Or if you missed that date, send it to Lorna Day, 16514, Northeast 44th Way, Redmond, Washington, 98052. And you can do that anytime in the next months. And she will collect those letters and send them on to me when she knows where we are at our next port. She's helping us out that way. Thanks, Lorna. This town is our home for 6 weeks or so, and we're very happy with it. Consider sometime making a visit to Horta in the Azores. It's a place of simple charm with a special feeling of remoteness from the bustle of continental life. Bye-bye. David.